A to B is Friday, September 22nd at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. My name is Clyde Ellis. I'm an attorney for the Deansville 6. And I'm speaking with Bob Ritz in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Bob, will you tell me a little bit about your involvement with the Veterans Against the War?
I got in VVAW through an advertisement in Playboy when they were still picking out nationwide advertisements. And I sent in my money, and those forms got passed on down to the state level, and they sent me some more forms, and I sent in my money again and became a member twice. And got active in the Tulsa group. And at that time, I was bringing in around 1,000 a month, and I had a car and access to a fantastic amount of office machinery, quality stuff, duplicating equipment and everything. So, and I had time and, you know, relative money compared to the rest of the people, So I started, you know, there was always something to do in my calendar with it. And I could write, and we were trying to turn out this paper. And I don't know, I just got really active in a hurry. And sort of because of that became a threat, but I wasn't trying to. And when it came time for February National Steering Committee meeting, I was the only one that had money to go, and that's why I got chosen to go.
And where was that held?
Denver and Boulder. And theoretically, I was supposed to go in place of Mike Duggins, who was a regional coordinator, or at least thought he was. Limber thought he was, too. And in representing Mike, I would have been representing Oklahoma and Arkansas. But Limber came over in advance of the Denver meeting, came here to Tulsa, and argued Douglas out of that, and tried to argue him into letting him represent both states. So the way it wound up was that Limber would represent Arkansas, and I would represent Oklahoma. And then Limber would have the vote, though, if we differed on anything. And Limber brought another guy along with him, brought Mike Dameron. And so Dameron and I, Limber wound up chairing the thing quite a bit, and Dameron and I would vote for either Oklahoma or for Arkansas, and if we agreed, fine, and if we didn't, we'd just cancel each other out. But I suppose Limber could, you know, swung it his way. Well, we never did disagree, really. But
when did you first meet Billy?
Hello,
Randy.
Keep talking about what we're
doing. I met him here over.
Let's go ahead and cut this.
The question was what? When did I first meet?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We were going to have an Oklahoma-Arkansas regional meeting, as we were supposed to or should have, prior to the Denver meeting, the steering meeting. So, you know, theoretically, we could see where Oklahoma stood, where Arkansas stood, where the regions stood, project that into the steering committee functions. And so we tried to have this thing, and the day we planned it for it snowed like hell. But we had a POW MIA wives thing speaker lined up in a movie. We had some clergy people locally that are in a war activist. We had one of the Senate candidates. You know, we were going to put on a show for them. And quite a few people did come, and we sort of had a powwow, but it wasn't what it was supposed to be. And that was where I first met Limber. He was at Duggan's house, Duggan's apartment. And I just saw him for, you know, an hour or two, and that was about it.
And what month was this?
It would have been early February. Probably, as I recall, it would have been about 2 weeks. It was scheduled about 2 weeks prior to the steering committee meeting, and that was the 27th through the 29th. So it would have been the first week or second week of February.
How did he become regional coordinator?
I don't know that he ever did. That happened, if it ever happened officially, after I was out and after the Denver steering committee meeting. Roger DeVito was at one time the regional coordinator, and he was duly elected or appointed or whatever, and he passed on his powers to Mike Duggins because Roger didn't have time to do it, and Roger wanted to do it, and Mike, I know that Mike wanted to do it, but he was already running the Tulsa chapter. So Roger was also the Oklahoma coordinator as well as the regional coordinator. So he sort of said, hey, I don't have time to do all this anymore. I've got to get out of it. Mike, you want to do it? So Mike took it. Now, the question is whether or not, you know, legally, Mike could just assume those duties. Really, what should have happened, of course, was that there should have been a meeting between Oklahoma and Arkansas. They should have gone through the whole process and gotten another regional coordinator. And it probably would have come out to be Mike Duggins. But anyway, DeVito just passed his powers on, which was in question, you know, with the Arkansas people. And I suppose all of us did want to be fair about it. So this was Glimmer's main point of contention all along. And finally, after the steering committee and after this ridiculous article on the Times and a bunch of other things, we did have our meeting. DeVito did make it, some other Oklahoma City people and people from Edmond and here and there and people from Arkansas. And we did have our joint meeting between Oklahoma and Arkansas. It would have been the first week in March, I think, on a Saturday, possibly the second week in March. And we got in a really big hassle over a lot of things, mainly what went on in Denver, and the article in the Times, and one thing or another. And I left the meeting, but I understand that they did finally, in one way or another, officially make Glimmer the regional coordinator, or at any rate, he assumed that position from that time on.
Which meeting was this?
This was an Oklahoma-Arkansas meeting sometime in the early part of March after we all got back in Denver.
Okay, when did you leave UVAW?
At the same time, that same Saturday, whatever date that was.
What Times article were you reading?
There was an article in the New York Times Sunday edition, February something, very end of the month, whatever, like the last Sunday there was, or the first Sunday in March. I can't recall. Ellen has it. You can look at it. It's on page 47 of the Times, and it had a headline like, you know, we're activists planning this and that at the San Diego convention. Then it went into this long spiel about all the things UVAW was going to do and who they were tied in with on all this. And then at the end of the article, it quoted me as saying something that I would have to agree with in spirit, but did not say, would not have said that way had I said them. And it didn't even directly tie me in with all that had gone on previously in this article, but by inference, you know, it looked like, since it said Robert A. Richardson, Tulsa, Oklahoma, blah, 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 it looked like I knew or agreed with all these other things. And the whole article was a, you know, which it wasn't. The article was quoting this some document that had circulated at the Denver meeting, and it was brought up by some people in the California chapter or some other San Diego-based coalition of people. Was some document that they had, and they were trying to get DDAW approval on, and they did not get DDAW approval on it. But anyway, it was that document that was quoted, and then these random comments, allegedly from me, at the end of the article, made the whole thing look like, you know, not only was I saying these things attributed to me at the end of the article, but I also had this document, and I agreed with it, and it was DDAW policy, and it was written up at the time, so this was what DDAW was. you know, the plainest English I could. Look, folks, this is a crock of shit. And if you don't buy it, then I don't buy you. Because, you know, I'll take that kind of stuff from the outside, but I'm not going to take it from the inside. You know, what kind of friends are you people supposed to be? If my folks want to say, how do you think I'll comment? Twitter, I'm like, you know, that's okay. I can take that. But not from in here. I don't buy that. But if you all decide, you know, you figure out whose side you're going to be on here. There was never any roll call or show of hands. It was pretty obvious that they were going to buy Lemmer's story, and that I did talk to the Times correspondent and all this, and I said, that wasn't a gift. And then I'd be in it. Since now, as it turns out, months and months later, I had BBAW people from our end here coming and say, well, we kind of like to apologize to you, know, we gave you a bad deal here over that article and over Lemmer, and now it turns out that he's an FBI informer. Well, you know, that's what I told you people a long time ago.
Well,
however, I'll tell you right now, that one of the people you ought to be more concerned about than Lemmer is Gary Dyerman.
Who is he?
Who is he? Where he is now, I don't know. He's a perennial has-been around here, except he's not here now. He has been for years in the Democratic Party. He's always running for something to get miserably trounced. And he's a government employee. Theoretically, he can't take part in all these things. Can't hold office in BBAW or whatever. Can't do this, can't do that. Couldn't fall under the terms of the Hatch Act. Does anyway, he gets away with it. And everyone thinks, oh, well, that's cool. Gary Dyerman works for the government. He's a really, really top artist, you know.
What kind of job's he in?
He was with the Model Cities program. And I was trying to tell him all along, look, the guy works for the government, you know, he falls into the terms of the Hatch Act just because he's friendly with you, because he wears a button that says something you agree with, that means, you know, just because he's been around for a long time. Dyerman is a really dynamic person. He's sort of like a latter-day Paul Harvey. A guy can say anything, and you'll agree with it for about 5 minutes. You know, he has time to work it over in your head. But he's really persuasive and really dynamic, and he was Lemmer's big friend. And he was the one within Oklahoma, the only person in Oklahoma I know that was constantly pushing for power for Lemmer. You know, you would think, just as people in any organization are prone to be, you know, he's going to push for somebody in Oklahoma. But no, he always pushed for Lemmer. And he went to the meeting. He was not appointed. He was not invited. He was not anything. It was supposed to be a closed meeting. But he went with Lemmer, and Lemmer's car, Lemmer and Dan went to the meeting. He wasn't representing anyone. He was just trying to watch the meeting. And he theoretically couldn't go in to the some meetings and in the hall, these things were all closed. They kicked everybody else out, you know, other people were coming. There was some tangent Colorado vets for something or other group, and there was some San Diego people, a coalition. They kicked all those people out. We even took a roll call one time, made everyone stand up and identify themselves and get their name kicked off, you know, the list. And everybody got kicked out except Dyerman. I never could understand that, except that it was the day that Lemmer was chair on the floor. Now, so here's this guy with no credentials whatsoever. In fact, I had credentials. And here's this guy with no credentials whatsoever allowed to stay in these meetings and participate in the mark. He's representing something. Like an at-large delegate, but he sure didn't have a credential. And it happened on the day Lemmer was chair on the floor. They laid his hand and kicked all these other people out. He worked on our newspaper here, and he did this and did that. He was active, there's no doubt about it. Guy speeds around all the time, doesn't get a lot done, so people are giving him a lot to do. But I never did trust him. He never did trust me. And he was the one that got the article plan with this freelance stringer from the Times. Stringer was his thing on his trigger. And he and Dyerman, you know, had been drinking buddies since they were this high. And of course, when all this finally came to pass, Dyerman's like, I've never seen this man in my life. I've never heard of him, you know, because I'm a big actor. Everybody knows. DVAW from the inside. And at the same time, it would suit Dodderman's purpose, and I suppose Wimber's purpose, to make it look like, you know, I was the informer, I was the pig, and I blew the whole thing. And so this article got printed, and the local chapter bought it, and I said, hell.
What was the gist of that article? What was the paper from the coast, the position paper we wanted to accept in that?
Massive disruption of the Republican convention when it was still coming to San Diego. And how media values can do this and do that. And we're calling somebody approaching horse, and I don't know, telling us the article. I had that one last copy of it, and I never have it.
When's the last time you saw him?
That Saturday evening when I was home in Arkansas.
We never saw him after that.
Would have been, I think, in the first week of March, I'm not sure. It was after we were all back from Denver, which was in February.
Well, did you know Bill Wimber very well during that period of time?
That goes in another hole. See my head? All right, okay. I was having hair transplant. Get old, bleach your hair, you know, and so get the stocking. So anyway, at that time, it would seem like every time I would get transplants, which is just now beginning to flourish, and my hair would go out and say, maybe not quite this long, but just get about halfway decent. You know, it was time for me to have more hair transplants. Well, obviously, when they do any sort of surgical process on your head, they got to shave your hair off, or in parts. So this was what I was up against constantly. And every time I would, you know, like this, maybe I could go without my wig, or one of these wigs. Maybe I could go without my wig. It's time for another surgery, and never went again. So I wore a wig for darn near a year straight, night and day. And I was really self-conscious about, you know, I didn't care if people knew it was a wig. It was an obvious wig, and I didn't care less. But what bothered me was that they would see what was under it, with my head all shaved down and patchy, and bandages and cuts and blood and scabs. You know, it wasn't very pleasing. So, also, because I say I was employed making darn good money, I was the editor of a nationwide trade paper in the medical field, among other things. And I had money, and one thing or another. So when I got to Denver, you know, I got myself a hotel room. I was also there on business, and the company was partially paying for my trip. In fact, I was going to ride up with either Nicholas Dodgman or ride with Wimber when they both came to Oklahoma, you know, which was in Tuesday or Wednesday. The meeting started today on Friday. And the company said, no, you can't leave. We've already got one man out of town. We can't have any more key people out of town right now. So I've got to go to this meeting. You know how I'm involved in this. They said, okay, when did it start? And I said, Friday. They said, okay, you stay here and fly out of here Friday morning. Well, I don't really want to spend money out and ride up with these other people if I leave early in the week. So they said, well, how about this? We'll just buy your round trip ticket. And you go up there and you become the business for us. Well, I said, fine. So I flew out of here Friday, first class, company money, and I checked into the hotel in Denver, and that's where I stayed. Well, this looks suspicious, or Wimber and Dodderman, already there, got their way ahead of me, made it look suspicious. Like, why doesn't this guy stay with us? You know, here these nice Denver DVAW people are opening up their homes to us and all this. Why doesn't he stay with us? You know, because I had my company briefcases full of stuff, and I had my wig, and I had other business to do, and I needed to rent a car, and I needed a phone, and I checked into a hotel. And that's where I did both DVAW and company business from. But they really made a big show of that. Really simple, and you know, it evolved around the wig, really. That the fact that the company was paying for me to go up there and to come back to be a business, which I thought was pretty cool for a redneck company. So, but anyway, they made a big deal of that, and I did not stay with BBAW people when I was there, stayed by myself. But I came back with Wimber and Bammer. I don't know how or exactly when Dodderman left. He left early. I think it was like Sunday morning, and the thing dragged on until Tuesday. I came back with was Limerick Family and the Mustang. Yeah, I think it didn't save money. So I spent like 12 long hours with them coming back. Plus I was involved with them, that whole driving through Tuesday. And also there was another thing that happened that sort of brought about, well, I hate to use the word, the closeness between Limerick and I. I suffer from current term of evil things to do, you know, hypertension, overwork, and without a medicine, wasn't taking my medicine, and wasn't eating right, and staying up all night, and doing all these things I know I shouldn't do. I got sick. I got sick in Boulder. The meeting had moved to Boulder for 2 days. I got sick in Boulder and had to be taken to the hospital. And Limerick came on to the hospital, and I just released the papers from the hospital, you know, to release to the custody of a friend, which, you know, friend. But anyway, they gave me a shot. And, you know, Limerick stayed there long and was released to Limerick. And so all during that time, while Limerick and I were together a lot, for whatever the reason, and then we were about halfway to have a private business transaction between the two of us as well. He was starting this medical project over in Arkansas. And I imagine you know about it, but
nobody knew about it.
Well, they were going to deal with the indigent population that couldn't afford, you know, they deal with here all us trained medics, you know, to go and sell our money on one of them. Let us do our thing. You know, but anyway, they needed a vehicle, a van, or an old ambulance or some sort of thing. And that's one of the things our country dealt with. We built new ambulances, but we had to take trades from time to time. And we had a bunch of them sitting around, and they were wanting to get one of these on. And he was going to come back to some of these things, and we were going to talk about doing purchasing. We were there to test, but...
Did you ever hear a rumor talk about using any kind of weapons or
violence or anything like that?
No. That's, all this has been so long, you know, time blurs and all this. But this was, how that story got started, I don't know. I mean, I do know because they started it, but it just sort of went right hand in hand with that article in the Times. Anything else they could have done, I suppose they would have done. But I'm telling you people, though, before you don't seem to understand, Dotterman is the key in this, not Limerick. But Limerick is the one you've got on tape confessing something, so that's where you concentrate your efforts. You need to get Dotterman. If they could have pinned on me that I was queer or a rapist or served 20 years or ball my mother at night or any sort of perversion or anything they could have hung on me, they would have. The Times article, which is plain A, this business about this whole thing that came up about me overhearing them talking about weapons or arsenal or violence or something, you know, and all these things. I can't remember the exact circumstances, you know. I remember the Times article. I remember that. Frontwards and backwards, but this other business didn't even come up till that Saturday. And, you know, there it was.
What other business?
About the weapons.
I don't know about that.
Well, there was, okay, this is going to be blurry, you know, but it's going to be the best I can do. But they somehow passed the word around among different people who, you know, couldn't keep the secret themselves, that I had, overheard and then started passing on to people that Limerick and Dameron and that group were collecting an arsenal and that they were going to use it for something, one doesn't know what, and that I wasn't to be trusted because I was spreading this word all around. Okay, theoretically, the way they tell the story, I was asleep in the back seat and overheard them discussing this business, this arsenal business. And then as soon as I got back to Tulsa, I ran and told all my friends. Okay. I did sleep in the back seat part of the time, but I didn't overhear anything like that. Then at this meeting in March or whatever it was, when we were all together, they brought this out, you know, and started hit signs, all those signs. So, and they acted like they were really uptight, like they really did have one, and I really had passed the word. And then we finally got Leonard on the subject. So we finally, with some other help, you know, got him down to the point where he said, well, no, we really don't have one, people. We really don't have anything like that. But we just talked about it in the front seat of the car to see what Rich would do with it. So I don't know whether they have one or not. But like I said, that part of it is really blurry. That was just one more insult they were throwing in, you know. And there got to be so many of them. The main one, as far as I was concerned, was that article was gone. And then there was some, what I was really concerned about, even more than that, was what was going to happen with MDBA. Why was all this nonsense going on? What was happening? Well, I knew what was happening. It was a power play going on. And I had become unwittingly a power just because I had money and a lot of time, you know, compared to the rest of these guys, while I'm out of work, and I got a wife that's pregnant. Here I was, and it's free. Plenty of time and all that. So I had become a power and daughter for one thing. Linda didn't even know me for a couple of months while all this was going on. And here I was, you know, coordinator of Tulsa chapter of the International Steering Committee. And daughter and one me out. So here's how all these things started happening. And he used Linda to do it, to bring it off.
You had the original conflict. I don't understand the conflict between you and Dahrman. I guess that's the
okay.
Conflict.
Okay, yeah, that's the essence of it. Dahrman, well, first of all, we had a lot of differences. It's that simple. We just had a lot of differences. And the thing was, I could hold office, and I could do this, and I could do that, and I could be a spokesman, and I could be on television, and I could be on radio, and I was all those things. And Dahrman couldn't because he fell under the conditions of the Hatch Act. So I was saying things the way I saw them with the NDBAW, and Dahrman had no way to answer back. He had no way to contest that he couldn't hold an office. We couldn't have an election and have a showdown because he couldn't run. He couldn't go on television and say things. He couldn't do this. He couldn't do that. And so this was his big problem. Dahrman is on a tremendous ego trip. I would have been glad if I wasn't doing half of what I was doing. But we never, you know, no, who's going to do this? Well, who can do it? No showing him. Nobody raised their hand. And I was always the one that was able to, and that's how I got where I got. And it really upset Dahrman that it happened. And that it happened that way, and he was sort of powerless from within the Tulsa group anyway to do anything about it. So we moved the whole thing up on the next higher plane, moved it up on a regional level, then he can bring Limmer in. And then he can bring in these problems of, well, Duggins has no right to do this. The veto can't pass on those powers, and therefore Duggins can't pass them on to you. And I, Bill Limmer, am the answer. I'm your messiah to all this, you know. Make me the regional coordinator, and then furthermore, I have connections in high places because I sleep with girls in Denver, you know, it's that sort of thing. And the people bought it.
Do you think that Bowerman is committed to the goals of the DBAW and looks like he knew the better way to achieve them?
No,
he was constantly trying to disrupt and establish the
He was constantly trying to disrupt and put suspicion into and all that sort of thing.
Are you suggesting that the prosecuting agents in the state granted him leniency under the Hatch Act because
Definitely, because he went on television
to sabotage.
Right, he did this and he did that. Things that most definitely he couldn't do under the Hatch Act. And he got away with them anyway. In one of the think, you know, people watch what we do and read about in the paper, they would surely say, hey, Mr. Otterman can't do that. We've got our eye on you. Okay, this is a student, I think, at the University of Arkansas, Second Hill, or at least he was a campus hanger on. I think his major in poli sci, that was worth it. In Denver, he and Diane were got to be good friends, and Diane eventually got to be, she was made the editor of the first casualty. She was involved prior to that with the Colorado people, and prior to that, somewhere else, traveled a lot. But she had been involved with Dave Rosen and the Colorado people for a long time, and I think she turned out their paper for them. And she, like I said, eventually got the position of the editor of the first casual for a 3-month trial period. And while we were all in Denver, Limmer and Diane got to be close friends. Yeah, I really don't know too much about Limmer. He seems to have one friend, and that's Dan Brinkley, you know, old time DBAW. And I think all of, you know, I guess Dammer has an allegiance to Limmer on a friendship basis, who did prior to this time, you know. And Dammer and I really didn't hit it off too well, but I was really respecting him. He was before the Senate with the Winter Soldier investigation and all. He's one of the old timers. And I really sort of respect the guy. Although he was, you know, look at the strings above his limbs that Limmer pulled. But Dammer seemed to be his only friend, close associate.
What about women's relationships with women? Do you know anything about that?
With him?
Women.
With Diane, look.
Did they live together?
In Denver, they did, yeah.
Does he, you
I don't know whether he knew her before that. Right?
Does women you thought?
I'm sure he's not.
You ever seen taking pills?
No. We smoked together one time.
Do you know where we went to it?
No. Now, I heard that he had cut his hair and shaved his beard, and he was on a college campus in Wyoming, and I don't even remember where I heard that.
Do you know when you heard that?
Yeah, about a month ago. From someone locally, Ellen or someone, but, you know.
As a student or a teacher?
As an activist. Mm-hmm. Or whatever words you want. I heard this, they were concerned. I don't remember exactly who I heard it from, but they wanted him produced at their trial in Oklahoma City. This is how we got off on the sentence, remember, in the first place. When that came up, someone brought it up. I don't think there were a lot of people in and out of the night that night. But someone said they had heard that.
Were you involved in the Tinker action?
No, that was after me.
Okay, can you think of anything else at all about reading that would be interesting? Some personal habits, personal freedom?
No, the only thing, you know, I really have to stress is that if you've got Limmer on tape and he says he's an FBI informant, fine, a paid agent or whatever, okay, all well and good, I don't know. But the man that's, just like he pulled Dameron's strings, the man that's pulling his strings is Gary Gardner. And so many people call him Gary Gardner, you know. You know, I can get to the bottom of this. And poor Donovan is, he left here, never came back, as far as I know. We heard he was going to work on the East Coast in some senator's campaign or senatorial candidate's campaign.
One day.
Right after I got out of the VA, right after that meeting, I decided so many things. That first week in March, everybody was back. He left shortly after that, and he was in there at 10 o'clock. Yeah, if anyone here would know where the daughter would be, it would be Dave Joyce, I would be.
What an Eloise in Chicago.
Just got both of them.
Yeah, Ellen and, yeah, I could figure it out.
Where's Ellen coming to this year, Becky?
Through the Ottoman. And yeah, Ellen, you know, she does.
Was your son involved?
He was, but not really when I was there. He was on our role, never been out yet.
Let me have your address if you need.
211 West King, Dalton. Phone number is 584-6208.
West King?
King.
K-I-N-G.
K-I-N-G.
Okay, I need to find it.